Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And man, this week, if you have been dodging snowstorms, it's been a crazy week for that. Hope you're good, doing well, and got dug out, took a very weenie way out. My brother, a couple months ago, he's a big pickleball player. Keep your eyes out for him on the middle-aged guy's pro circuit. He may be making a splash at some point. But he's like, hey, there's this pickleball camp in Tucson where we used to live. You want to go down? And I'm not really a pickleball player. I've played a couple times. You know, well, I play a couple times, you know, two, three times a year maybe. So yeah, worked out well, was planned way ahead of time. But as the rest of the country dug out, flew down to Tucson, and I'm going to be getting it handed to me, you know, by 70-plus-year-old people on the court tomorrow. So should be fun. We'll see how that goes. A little different way to spice up the week. But anyway, this week on the podcast, the third commandment of financial mastery, which is optimize your three profit levers. We're going to talk about those today. The three things you should be focused on. So easy to focus on margin. It's so easy to focus on, you know, putting energy and time into your marketing and all these different things. No, it's not what you should be doing. You should be focused on these three things first, which we're going to get into just here in a second. And I love these because these are things, at least one of them is something you can do today, or at least in the next couple of days or week at the most. The other two take a little more time, but they're so much easier than trying to, you know, increase your marketing footprint or conversion rate by a third, or become a third better at something, you know, at leadership, or all these things. They take relatively fast acting, which is why they're important to focus on. Before we dive in, one thing I do want to just give a shout out again for, I'm in the middle of collecting data for the Ecom Fuel Trends Report. And this is a study that I have done, spent a couple of years getting back on the horse on all facets of Ecom. And if you own a store, two reasons why you should participate. First, I'm shamelessly bribing you. Round trip, business class ticket anywhere in the world up to 5K value to one lucky person. Secondly, you get a free copy of the report. It's super in-depth, and you'll get it before everyone else. So ecommercefuel.com/trends if you'd like to participate. I would love to have you be a part of that. Okay, let's jump into today's episode. Imagine you wake up tomorrow. It's been kind of an exciting couple of months in the news, say, regardless of your political persuasion. You wake up tomorrow, Congress has passed a 33% additional tax on your business profits. Every quarter, you get to spend you get to stroke that beautiful check for 33% more than you're already paying now and send it to the government. You would probably freak out. Even if, again, regardless of political persuasions, it would be probably wouldn't be the best news for you. And there's a good chance that's what you're doing right now if you haven't aggressively tested your pricing, because there's a very good chance you're probably leaving 33, you know, anywhere from 20 to 60% of a profit boost on the table that you are gifting to your customers every day. If you are creating groundbreaking cancer drugs for children, maybe you shouldn't be thinking about this from a pricing optimization standpoint. I'm guessing that is not your niche. If it is, keep up the good work. If you are selling very discretionary goods to people, you owe this to yourself, to your team, your family to be doing this. And this is my number one absolute favorite lever of all three we're going to talk about today for a couple of reasons. One, it's really fast. You can do this in the next week, if not in the next day, if you hustle. It's fast, it's immediate, and it's probably the biggest lever in terms of shaping your bottom line and impacting your profitability, because price increases are 100%, they contribute 100% to your contribution margin. We talked about contribution margin last week. Go back and check out that episode if you didn't. But here's an example. What do I mean by 100% contribution margin? That means that every incremental amount of profit you get due to a profit price increase goes right to your bottom line. Here's an example so you can get a sense of the power of this. Let's say you run a $3 million business selling. Do a shout out to our friend Brett Haney out in California. He sells avocados. Let's say you're like, listen, these avocados are great. They're not nearly as good as my Tucsonian oranges that I'm going to start selling, my bespoke, you know, oranges that I play Mozart to every night. So you start this, you know, this very high-end boutique orange business, $3 million in sales. Your profit margins are 10% because you got to pay a lot of people to play all this music to these oranges. This is getting quickly ridiculous, forgive me. You make $300K in profit on your business. Okay, you've never tested prices. You listen to this episode, you come back, you raise your prices by 15%. Now, let's say even your revenue decreases a little bit. Let's say revenues go down by 10%. So you're only doing 2.7 now in revenue, but you have a 25% profit margin. Your new profits are 675K. Your profits more than double. You didn't have to hire anyone. It happened instantly, and you're doing less work. So this is why I love price increases. And the fears, of course, are that your customers, the biggest fear is your customers are going to revolt. You're going to raise prices, and an angry mob of customers with pitchforks is going to come and attack you and shut down your business. Well, A, this is almost never true. B, when it is, it's almost certainly far, far less than you expect. And it's just something that should not keep you from doing this. I've done price increases across 3+ businesses over the last 10+ years. Always the fear is there. Always it is not founded in the way I think it should be. There's a member in our forum in the Ecom Fuel private community, a longtime member, one of the smartest people I know. He was talking this year about how he has raised his prices. He's so glad he did, and he wished he had done it sooner because he's making more money. He's doing less work. He needs less people. It's going to tie into our second lever point here in a minute. And it's just been a huge win for him. And I think the point is, like, again, this is one of the smartest, most accomplished, successful people I know in our community. And so if it took him longer to raise his prices, there's a chance that none of, you know, almost all of us, even if you raise prices recently, haven't done that. And if you think about it, if you're in the US, if you're in Canada, anywhere affected by tariffs, this is a huge thing. I mean, there's also, especially I've seen a reluctance of people to raise prices, even when their supply chain prices are going up, because they don't want to, not always. I'm going to get some really great data on this from the upcoming survey we're doing. But yeah, you're going to absolutely have to do it. It's even more important now than ever. Another kind of quote anecdote from our community. Someone said, a funny thing has happened since increasing my prices by $1 across the board. My sales have gone up significantly. A third person said, the end result of increasing prices, I was able to reduce our warehouse personnel. We get less customer service contracts. One increase is a complaint about higher prices, though. Laughs out loud. Less returns, less exchanges, and in general, my life is better. Two more levers, and I don't want you to have to listen to me talk for 45 minutes. Do some price increases. This week, if you have not done this, or it has been 6 to 12 months since you've done this, sit down and make a plan about doing it again. Lots of different ways you can do this. There's some great tools out there. One's called IntelliGems. Huge disclosure right at the gates. I'm an investor in them. I think they do great work. I love their tool. I think they're probably considered one of the better, if not kind of the premium choice for price testing. But you do not have to use them. You can use your own spreadsheet. Done is better than perfect here. But the most important thing is track your changes to your profits, not to revenue. Contribution margin is helpful here in terms of, well, it's all 100% of it, of your profit increase is going to go down to contribution side, to your net income. But make sure when you're tracking this, that you're tracking, you're optimizing for profit and not revenue. And then finally, when you think about once you decide to raise your prices, you can do this. The only way that you're going to have that angry group of customers coming to you with pitchforks like Beauty and the Beast is if you do it in a really poor way. But if you communicate to your existing customers ahead of time, hey, we're going to have a price increase coming in a couple of weeks. We want to hook you up with the best offers here. You've got a week left. Not only can you make your existing customer base feel special because they are special and loved, you can also drive some revenue as well, letting people know that there's a sense of urgency to buy. Price increases, number one lever. Got to do it this week. Number two, and these next two things take a little more time, but equally as important. Second one is your overhead. Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar to introduce you to Yin, who is the owner of CoStudio.co, where she sells and makes incredible boxing gloves and apparel for women. And wanted to give you just a little snapshot of her experience with E-commerce Fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure store owners.
The ECF community has helped me feel less alone on my journey of building an e-commerce brand. I feel like whenever I'm stuck or there's a question that I can't find the answers to online, the community always has great advice and insight on whatever topic I'm stuck on. I feel like I've also learned a lot of great new strategies and made amazing connections through the platform, and I can't imagine building the brand without it now.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their seven or eight figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. So I want to read you something from the last Ecom Fuel Trends report that I did. It's a couple of years old. I'll be able to verify this data, you know, within the next month or so based on the data that we collect. Again, ecommercefuel.com/trends if you'd like to participate. We really need to move that domain over after the rebrand here, but we haven't done that yet. Sorry, SEO sidebar, internal project. But here is an excerpt from the last Ecom Fuel Trends report we did. I think it's very telling. Quote, "My favorite part of this study is learning from the commonalities among successful brands. What truly is important and what is window dressing? To help answer that question, we looked at a few different groups. We looked at fast-growing, cohort A, and fast-growing and profitable companies. What do they have in common? The number one takeaway, your ROAS doesn't determine your level of e-commerce success. Shockingly, the difference in ROAS between top and bottom performing stores was negligible. Given it's a metric many brands obsess over, it's surprising to see how little impact it had. Here is what did drive successful outcomes. A brand's business model, if they're drop shipping, if they are, you know, if they're manufacturing their own product, et cetera, and their operational efficiency. Top brands in the growing and profitable group had half as many people on their payroll, were 25% more likely to outsource warehouse operations, and 25% less reliant on paid traffics. So, point being, the biggest determinant outside of your business model for how well you are, profitable you are, how successful you are to be actually generate real cash is your overhead. 50% smaller payroll. And I think, you know, this is something this is such a hard thing to do because A, you're talking about people. People are going to be most businesses' largest expense line. You don't want to be cavalier here. You don't want to, you know, good leaders think about their people. But I think good leaders also can sometimes have a tendency to have too many people on the team to think about, to not want to make hard decisions when it doesn't suit the business. And sometimes we wait way too long and leave a lot of money on the table under the guise of compassion. So got to think about the people here. But that's a massive difference. Half the payroll for the companies that were really profitable and doing well. An anecdote from our forum, one of our members had 35 employees. 35. He changed to a remote work environment. He hired a 3PL. He let go of all but one employee, hired 8 freelancers, automated a lot, and he now is observing record profitability and his life is much easier. So if he was able to go from 35 employees to one employee and 8 freelancers, man, that just, and obviously this is one anecdote from someone. I think this is something it's very hard to do this oftentimes when we don't have to, because, you know, there's a quote I love. It's that your success in life is measured by the number of hard conversations you are willing to have. Oftentimes we don't have hard conversations until we absolutely have to. But if you can proactively have some of these hard conversations, make the team what you want it to be, and not just your team too, right? Like, think about your warehouse, your operations. This is not just staff. It's nice offices. It's big warehouses. It's recurring software expenses. It's all of these kind of things. It's hard to do. It takes time, takes effort, but it has a massive impact on your ability to be profitable. A couple little nuance here. If you're under $5 million and you're not planning on trying to rapidly scale, this is much easier to do. There's a great book called No Man's Land. And it talks about this concept where if you are in the $5 to $10 million range and you are trying to grow and hire an executive team and really pull yourself out of the business and scale up, sometimes you have to, or often you have to, hire and invest ahead of your growth curve. You have to hire and you know, it's kind of the classic, do you want to optimize for growth or do you want to optimize for profitability? Jen Giel and Blair Budlong, years ago at one of our Laguda events, had a talk where they illustrated this really beautifully. I think it was Jen, but forgive me, Blair, if this was you. Something I remember 7-8 years later, make sure you decide which one of those two you're trying to optimize for, because it's impossible to optimize for both. And if you do, you're going to fail at both. So if you're trying to get through no man's land, if you're trying to scale, take this with a grain of salt. That's not your goal. But if you're trying to build a profitable company and you're not, and you're comfortable with either limited growth or you're comfortable with where you're at, your overhead almost certainly is one of the biggest things that can impact it. But even then, there's still some exceptions. I think Native Deodorant, which was founded by Moiz Ali, a lot of people are probably familiar with them. I think they were doing $30 million in revenue when they sold for $100 million, and they had a team of 8 people. That's crazy. I mean, that smokes even Apple's metric for revenue per employee, I would guess. I think one really good framework for thinking about this, as I get to my challenge for the week here, is if we're going to have something in-house, if we're going to hire someone for this position, if we're going to run these warehouse operations, if we're going to do the marketing, marketing is a tough one. That's a whole other operation or a whole other podcast if you should outsource your marketing. That one's a tough one to do. But as you think about it, is this something that we're going to have in-house that is core to our brand and our offering? One example, there's a company, Packed Bags, out of Bozeman, run by Malcolm. Got a chance to get to know him. He's a great guy, and their team. And design is what makes them great. And they have an in-house designer in Bozeman. I have met him. His name is Andrew. Awesome dude. And that makes sense to have in-house because design is their bread and butter, right? It doesn't make sense to outsource that to somebody else. So I think that's a good litmus test for thinking through the things you should keep in-house. So this week, this is a slower one. Sit down. If you had to cut your overhead by 25%, somebody comes to you and says, hey, your business is going bankrupt. Unless you can create 25% less overhead, where would you cut? And decide if you need to make some medium to long-term changes in your business model. So overhead is number two. Number three, our final lever here is, I want to cue this up with an example. Let's say you've got two brothers. They're twins. They both run almost identical businesses. They both run a business that does $2.5 million in top line revenue. They both make $250K per year, so they have about 10% profit margins after they take their salary. And they both have decent accountants, you know? Both of their accountants, they're pretty good. They're 7 out of 10 accountants. You know, they are doing the basic stuff like QBI, the 20% or 21% or 22% deduction that you get for being a small business. You know, they know that kind of stuff. They take, you know, they're decent, competent accountants. But brother one, he contributes, you know, in 25K from his paycheck into his 401K. And he makes a $30,000 donation to his favorite charity out of his cash earnings for the year. And he pays $75,000 in taxes every year. He's roughly, you know, let's say 30-ish% tax rate, ballpark, effective. Brother number two, again, exact same business, exact same economics. He also contributes 25K from his payroll into his 401K, but he adds an extra 45K extra into his retirement account with profit sharing. He donates $30,000 as well to his favorite charity, which is the same as his brother's, but he, you know, because he can't be outdone. But instead of doing a cash donation out of his earnings, he donates appreciated stock to that charity instead, avoiding having to take a capital gains tax on that appreciated stock. He puts $8,500 into a health savings account. He pays each of his three kids, because he and his same brother both have three kids, but he pays his three kids $7,000 each for working in the business. They actually do real work, but he gives it to them for working the business to help them kind of set up a Roth IRA and also just to encourage them, their work ethic. He also donates $60,000 in old inventory that wasn't moving to a charity locally, giving him a deduction. So brother one pays $75,000 in taxes. Brother two, after all of that, everything we talked about, his tax bill is $20,000, $55,000 less. Brother one pays almost four times the tax as brother two. And this isn't even getting into that craziest stuff. This is just kind of basic things. And taxes are one of those weird things that it's so hard if you don't force yourself to do this, because often, especially in small businesses, taxes don't always come up on your P&L. You don't always sit down and see them clearly on a spreadsheet. You don't always get a report from your accountant or from different banks or brokerages about the delta or the difference between what your tax, you know, pre-tax and post-tax earning amounts are. And they're spread all over the place. You've got personal tax implications. You have business tax implications. There's a lot of opacity here. But that's why it's such a huge opportunity to be able to make this something that has a massive amount of impact on the amount of money that stays in your bank account every year. I thought through, I actually went through, this whole series has been a good exercise for me in thinking through what's really important to communicate here. I went through and made a list of all of these tax deductions and things you should be thinking about and different, you know, different types of 401k plans. And I almost put myself to sleep reading it. So I'm not going to cause you to you know, careen off the highway while listening and do the same. That will be something that I'll put together in a resource in the future in one of our live events that we do in the next, you know, upcoming month or months for this. But I think the big thing is this is a really important thing to internalize. Start thinking deeply about how can I optimize my after-tax returns? How do you do this? Chat with ChatGPT and just say, hey, you know a bit about me, assuming you use, you know, whatever your LLM of choice is, your poison of choice. Say, what kind of tax strategies should I be thinking about? Ask your CPA, you know, what kind of proactive new tax strategies they should recommend for this year. And as a little suggestion, if your CPA is not coming to you at least occasionally with new ideas or, hey, you should do this or what about this, it's time for you to get a new CPA. I had a great CPA that was perfect for the first 6 or 7 years of my business. And after that, I realized they were never giving me proactive advice. I had just outgrown them. My tax situation got more complex. They didn't have some of the experience with things that I was doing. And they were competent, but they weren't great. So if that's the case, it might be time to start shopping around for a new CPA. And finally, make sure you put a mid and a end of year tax check-in on the calendar. June, July, and then maybe, you know, late October, early November. Call up your CPA. Hey, how are we looking? What should we be thinking about here? A lot of people are familiar, but to optimize your QBI deduction, which can be a really meaningful deduction, you need to maybe think about, you can potentially optimize that with payroll bonuses to yourself or other people. And it's just a good thing to do. It can help you save some money. So those are the three things. Price testing, my number one all-time favorite. This is the biggest lever you have. And then behind those two on a more medium, long-term basis, thinking about keeping your overhead lean and really getting in the habit of starting to think about after-tax results. Those are the three levers. Next week, commandment number four, borrow wisely. I'm hoping to have Bill D'Alessandro on. He's of course a longtime friend of the podcast and myself. And this is his world. He knows borrowing and financing exceptionally well. So very excited to hopefully have him on to talk through all of this. So two final things. Again, mentioned it a few times, but Ecom Fuel Trends Report, ecommercefuel.com/trends. If you run a store, if you like traveling in style, would love to have you participate in that. And then finally, thank you for, I got a handful of notes from people and emails just mentioning that they've enjoyed this series. Thank you for those. And if you have enjoyed it, or if there's other things you have questions or things that you'd love to hear more about, drop me a note. It's so helpful. I think I explained to someone, or didn't explain to them, I think I mentioned this week to someone who was sending me a nice little note about the series that podcasting is often kind of like speaking into a black hole, a black void. There's no two way. You kind of forget people listen. You're not sure how things are landing, if they are landing, if they're not. So getting feedback, whether it's on Twitter or emails or just quick little, hey, getting value here, I love this, or keep doing this, or I'd love to hear this, insanely useful for me and gives me some fuel to keep going and tweak things and adjust accordingly. So all I have to say, thanks for your notes, appreciate them, and thanks for listening. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.